All lines are now bridged.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Conditions of Maintenance and Certification Task Force under the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. We will jump right into things, starting with our roll call. Denise Webb. Present. Raj Watani.
Here.
Carolyn indicated that she was going to be absent, and I believe Ken is still on vacation as well. Sasha Terma? Maybe not yet. Les Leonard? And John Travis?
Here.
Okay. Okay. I will turn it over to our chairs to just a quick review of our charge and our roster again before we dive into discussions around real-world testing. Either Kate or Denise?
Kate, do you want to go ahead and do the review of our charge? And then I think Raj is going to lead the discussion on real-world testing.
Yep.
Sure. So just another review of the charge. So the Conditions and Maintenance of Certification Requirements Task Force will be looking at the conditions of certification. The three we will be looking at are the real-world testing, the application programming interfaces, and attestations. This task force will also be looking at the any updates to the 2015 edition certification criteria, modifications to the ONC Health IT certification program, and the deregulatory actions noted in the proposed rule.
Thanks, Kate.
Great, and today we're gonna continue addressing the real world testing criteria. I think we got a relatively good start yesterday. And we'll get moving on that, and then if time, we'll hit the attestations piece. And Kate was kind enough at some odd hour, I think late last night, early this morning, thank you for all the hard work there, put together a Google Doc where we can pull up each of the proposed criteria and start walking through those in a more systematic fashion. So at a high level, what you have up in front of you right now, just to remind you, is the general conditions of certification for real-world testing that now would require that health IT developers have successfully tested the real-world use of technology for interoperability. And we started getting into some of the issues yesterday around what types of settings and scenarios and test cases, et cetera. So why don't we dive right in and pull up the doc and start walking through those criteria.
Great. Let me go ahead and share my screen. Okay, can you see it?
Not yet.
And I know sometimes it's a little bit of a delay, but we'll give it another couple seconds.
And did Katie stop sharing on the so Kate could share?
But I think it's starting now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you see it yet?
Not yet.
No, still coming. Sorry. Now it's up.
Okay. So this is starting with the real world testing. This is the regulatory proposed regulatory text.
Mm-hmm.
And down at the bottom here, I just added some comments that were made yesterday that John had submitted.
Great. Thank you, Kate. And John, thank you for sending that list of items. This is going to be really helpful. So why don't we jump to the top of the documents and start going through the proposed rule here. Some of these things we may have addressed yesterday, and so we can just kind of tag them as such, and we can start delving into the others. Does that work for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. All right, so I know yesterday there were some comments around the timing of this in terms of when the testing plan would have to be kind of executed upon. So the first item, so I'm jumping down to B1, has December 15th of the calendar year for the certified health IT modules. I don't know if that's actually when the testing is done versus posting.
Well, as I read through the text on this, both the ONC ACB and the health IT developer have the same due date for the test plan being published on the CHAPL site by December 15th to make it available to ONC. So that will require coordination between the health IT developer and the ONC ACB so that they mutually or together hit that date. So I would defer to John as a health IT vendor representative on whether there is something we would want to propose differently regarding that timeline. I know Sasha had some concerns about the time of year. Of course, this is to submit this in advance of the holidays. It's probably more the deadline for the testing results that might be more of an issue.
Yeah, she had suggested, I don't know that she had a specific date in mind other than that, but just that would run into potential problematic time frames for being able to compile things effectively by then. And I had made a suggestion, you know, I realized that ONC probably wants everything batched together from a given vendor so that they're not dealing with piecemeal. But an alternative might be to use the anniversary date of a product certification. They deal with so much that gets submitted in a certified product specific context, that would be an alternative. I think they probably value having a comprehension of all that a vendor does and all that a vendor might do across the waterfront of their certified HIT. And that may be a compelling interest. It just kind of rules the day on it. The one major alternative again would be to focus it on, since we have to do it per product, per domain, to consider doing it based on something like the anniversary date of a certification. So we throw that out there. That's one.
That would present some flexibility. I did note that you, the vendor, the health IT developer vendor could compile their test plan to address their suite of products, particularly where the testing is done across different modules or products by the vendor anyway. But I guess one thing I think about having everything have to come in on the same date That also presents a workload for the federal government and for the ONC ACB versus staggering it based on certification, last certification date.
So just so we have a long list of items to get through in a short amount of time. I think there's general consensus that the date should be thought through, perhaps to avoid the holidays, perhaps to avoid a glut of reports coming in to the federal government for processing, et cetera. So maybe we can kind of for now leave the note at that and have something that says perhaps this date should be revisited, given those concerns, and then we can sort of keep moving on.
Right. That could be, we could form a recommendation around that to possibly suggest staggering those submissions based on another criteria.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right, so BIs, where we are now. Any concerns around the plan must be approved by health IT developer, authorized representative?
No, I don't think so.
That makes sense.
The only thing I'm trying to remember, Raj, is, it's probably to be interpreted by the HIT vendor themselves, as to what they mean by authorized representative. I don't know if there's any language ONC would offer to say, kind of a minimum acceptance, whether it's an officer, an executive. I don't want to make it too complicated. That's the only thing we get into sometimes in our own policies around who can sign and represent.
Oh, I see.
If ONC wants to leave that up to the vendor, it's not any big deal, but they might actually be looking for somebody who speaks a little higher authority than somebody who's like a senior manager or director over a specific certification function or something like that.
So John, because I dealt with this when I was at Marshfield and who had authority to sign what, I mean, I think it is specified in most companies' policies who can bind the company for different types of
exactly.
things. I don't know that the federal government would want to get into being prescriptive
then
on
that's
that,
fine.
Even setting a lower bar. I would suggest that that's probably, this is pretty standard practice.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay,
great. Then we jump into the certification criteria that the plan must address. And so I think this is some more of the meat of it. So
clearly the test plans have to address the certification criteria related to interoperability. ONC does ask and solicit for comment on whether to also include patient health information capture certification criteria on page 279. So I don't know if we as a task force want to discuss that, whether not only what is being covered, but what about that addition? Yeah, right here, top of the page.
Yeah.
Let me look at one thing real quick. As we were going through in our internal review,
the previous page lists all the criteria that is applicable on page 278. That would have to be addressed in the test plan. So probably, John, I'd be interested in your perspective on whether you had any concerns.
Definitely not with the interoperability criteria. I think that's fair, and that's obviously what's important to them. The patient health information capture, I don't think we took any particularly strong reaction to, although it is a pretty open-ended criteria requirement in terms of what a vendor may do to test for it. And so it's not quite in the same vein as the other criteria.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that it fits real well on that basis. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. Maybe it can be considered an optional item at best, but at least for this.
Raj, did you have any strong feelings on this? Because if none of us have any strong feelings on it, I don't know that we have to provide a comment. It's just I wanted to make sure we collectively hit any area in here where they asked us to consider comments.
Yeah, good point. I don't either.
Okay. Can we back up on this page back to the list? Because I want to speak from my experience in public health. I know we were supposed to have somebody on the group that was representing the public health, weren't we, Lauren?
Yeah, that's Les. I don't think he's on today, but I'll reach out to him to make sure if he's on the calls moving forward.
Okay.
I was going to say the one thing to take care with the F criteria is that not all of them are required in any way. They're not part of the base EHR. They're not part of the definition of CERT in quite the same way that the interoperability requirement are. So it may be that there's a relative statement conditioned on, I mean, obviously if the vendor hadn't certified to it, but I don't want it to be taken that there's an implication that everything necessarily must be tested for every venue, because not all of them also are necessarily appropriate to every venue. So that could be accounted for in the plan. I just would want to make sure it's.
But I think if you're going to deliver your product to a health system, it has to be able to exchange information with public health. Immunizations, syndromic surveillance data, lab results, reportable lab results, you know, at a minimum. Those are all interoperability exchange functions.
No, I'm really just referring to the fact, I think if it's self-defining in here already that the vendor must include in their real-world testing plans to the degree that they've certified to those criteria, absolutely. I think that's where it stays. It doesn't imply anything else. Like you must necessarily test for each of those criteria in each venue, if not already part of it. It should be self-defining, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That second part is where I was going to make some comments, having my public health experience and having worked for
the state. Okay, good. Please go ahead.
So it's not so much about the fact that this should or should not be included as criterion that would have to be part of the test plan. I guess what I would be concerned about, testing in real world with the public health agencies and, you know, and all of the states and the nation, if your product covers, you know, all of those different venues. Again, it points to a concern you and Sasha had yesterday about the broadness, but there's really no guardrails around care setting and venue of to what extent the test plan has to cover, you know, what proportion of public health agencies, I mean, and that kind of thing. So that would just be my general comment.
No, I think that's fair, and I think this ties into some of the comments we did include in what I sent on the potential role of third parties. You know, who is going to set up to be a legitimate and recognized entity as a testing partner to be submitted to or to engage in bidirectional communication with, and that, you know, to your 50 state comment, there's a scalability question in there. Again, maybe it's what the vendor proposes as long as it's accepted, but there's not many guardrails around that criteria or that set of criteria in particular.
So Raj, I think it's worth noting, I mean, I guess the concern is the broadness of this. It probably would be helpful to health IT vendors if there were some kind of guardrail around care setting and I know we have a specific line on that, so I'll let you continue, Raj.
I think those are good points, and, you know, I did a more detailed reading of the the exact language this morning. What it seems like is happening is that it's been deliberately made quite broad, allowing the vendor for some flexibility here. And I think perhaps one recommendation we should be making is to provide them guidelines or templates of kind of a test plan. And I think that could be quite effective, and that's been done for some of the safety-enhanced design requirements in the past. NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, provided a template for vendors to follow for user-centered design and summative usability testing. And so something like that, it doesn't have to be a required template, but a suggested template, I think, could help this process a lot. And that could potentially be a strong non-regulatory way of handling some of this.
Yeah, that could be a good recommendation because, you know, I know that health IT vendor has to specify, you know, what care settings they chose and justify why, and they have to adequately represent a portion of their customer base in terms of volumes and those kind of things. So.
Yeah, this becomes one of those things where you give guidance to the vendor on how to set up what the market will take as a legitimate test. And while they give the vendor a lot of discretion, I can't believe ONC would want to leave it so much up to the vendor that you wind up with a very wide variability in the quality and scope of the test plans.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, so I think some guidelines, guardrails would be nice.
Yeah, I agree. So let's kind of note that maybe as a templated test plan that could be provided as a suggested process or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So jumping back to the doc that's up now, so we're walking through each of the certification criteria that have to be in the plan. So A is the testing methodology that'll be used to demonstrate real-world interoperability, including scenario and use case-focused testing. I think we yesterday discussed the recommendation, or at least the issue around what is a scenario versus use case testing.
Or are they the same? So,
exactly.
So
yeah.
We should make a recommendation on clearing that up, because as I read further into the preamble, there's a section where it talks about, for example, doing a scenario based on, let's see, it was on page 283, developers can and should design scenario based test cases that incorporate multiple functionalities as appropriate for the real world workflow and setting. Well, described that way, that sounds like use case. So are they one and the same? So I think they need definition.
Yeah, I agree. I think there needs to be clarification around scenario versus use case versus workflow. And I think the other clarification that is needed, and this came up yesterday as well, is this about testing the exchange of information, or is it about testing the exchange and use of information? And I think that's an important point, because testing the use of that information requires much more of a human cognition, human factors, usability element to it. And the definition of interoperability that's provided under the real-world testing description says use of health, of electronic health information. It's about exchange and use. And so if we're testing use, that means I think we should consider whether we need to have, that would suggest that we would need to have the providers involved in the testing and being able to determine whether the providers can actually process and digest the information that's being exchanged.
Yeah, I think it builds a lot more on some of the current state usability, you know, SED testing type of an approach where you do have to involve providers. And I might add,
it does
probably
say
both.
Go ahead, John, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, to add Raj's comment, I think it's dealing with with recording and use, you know, so is that a part of what the boundary of testing is, because they do want it distinguished from what certification testing accomplishes. I mean, they don't need us to go literally repeat what is done in the testing laboratory to attain the initial certification. They want it to be grounded in a practical utility of real-world use. So that does suggest, I think, those things are part of it. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah, I think that's really an important point. Go ahead, Denise.
So on the top of page 278, it gives three bulleted items that define what successful real-world testing means. And the last bullet does say electronic health information is received by and used in the certified health IT. Doesn't say used by the provider, but used in the product. So if you receive a, you know, if you receive the data elements defined in the USCDI, are they then incorporated and made available to the provider to reference and in their workflow and so forth? So it says used in, it doesn't say used by providers in the certified health IT. It's really talking about the product ingesting the information, not just receiving it, but then doing something with it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that is testable. I mean, right, John? I mean, you can demonstrate that when information comes in through an exchange, that your product does something with it.
Yeah, you know, it resolves matching to a record. It shows its ability to be brought up and displayed, and it may also include some processing attributes if that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think of the way that they constructed clinical reconciliation, for example.
Yeah,
but I think it is worth having that clarification, Raj, because if there's ambiguity about whether providers physically have to be involved in this testing,
yeah, I think that's right. And I think what I'm saying is a little bit of a nuance, Denise, from what you're highlighting and what's here. So there's, in my mind, there's information being exchanged, and in this case, it's articulating that it's being received. So that's the health IT system receiving the particular data elements that were sent over. That's all and well. Then used in the certified health IT, so to your point, Denise, I take that as meaning the receiving health IT system can now process that information in some method. So that's the health IT system using the information that's being exchanged. The other point that I think is critically important that we need clarification on is the information then usable and useful to the provider that it's being sent to or the patient that it's being sent to? And to me, that's the whole point of exchanging this information, is so that eventually it's getting in the hands of a clinician or patient in a useful and usable format. And it seems like real-world testing, the point of real-world testing, is to get at that very last piece. To make sure that after we go through this exchange process, that it's actually usable and useful. And so I think there has to be clarity there as to where what real-world testing is trying to get at.
Right. And if that's expected, then I agree with John and Sasha that there has to be some estimate of impact on provider organizations being involved in that testing.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think that is
okay.
Potentially considerably more work. Okay, so returning back to our document here. So for part A, I think we've discussed that. Part B, we talked about needing some clarification on the care settings themselves. John, any more specific thoughts here? I know some things came up yesterday.
Yeah, I think what we were looking at is things that could be, they're not necessarily suggesting because I'm not sure they're the right level, but in the past we've had a couple of sources that could be examples. Well, one, so the early programs, the early editions differentiated between hospital and ambulatory. CCHIT used to have some further differentiation. on domains that were not part of the certification program as ONC recognized it, but were offered up for, you know, long-term care venues, pediatrics, a few like that. You also have, there is a suggestion in the rule that draws on the way that use data used to be presented, attestation data and performance data for the meaningful use program, and how CMS presented the data. They outright, I think, call out an exhibit of that kind to say, you know, well, this could be a way you do it. But I think there needs to be a consistency of what the expectation is so that you get par-level test cases. I don't think that should be that variable as it seems to be in terms of what the rule calls for the vendor to kind of, it's fine enough for the vendor to say these are the venues we market into, and there may need to be some accounting for the difference in way they understand venue, but it should be pretty par level so that vendors are testing at a fairly consistent level with regard to how they develop and describe their test plans and their testing approach and results. You know, you could consider using some of the higher levels of provider taxonomy if you're getting into the ambulatory space, which is where you really could get the variability of approach.
Right. Okay, so I think between the conversation yesterday and your comments now, John, I think we have a recommendation we can formulate around that if we want to move in that direction.
Okay.
Okay, so
excuse me.
Are we down to C?
I think one other thing, and I don't know if it belongs under A, but I know we talked about it, is the role, you know, it's the word methodology, so the use of automated testing or the use of regression testing, especially where you have prior capability that has already been taken through this exercise at least once and the capabilities don't change, the requirements don't change, the venues don't really change. You know, is there a role for either a regression approach, or is there a role for an attestation to things not having changed, or is there a role for relying on real-world performance, actual production performance as evidence that would allow you to get some lift or some leverage from the fact that the capabilities used in production on a daily basis in a wide number of sites, does that have any standing for being accepted as a result or a proof point?
So is your concern, John, on that if, let's say in 2019, you submit your results for your current certified products for your real-world testing, just assuming this is all in place, so I'm just using artificial data here, and then when you go to submit your plan for 2020, the plan you submitted for the 2019 testing, the 2019 results that you supplied were for 2018, but your plan for 2019, let's say you don't plan to make any substantive changes or go to a new version under the version advancement process of ONCs for any of these criteria that are subject to this real-world testing, are you suggesting that you would be able to instead just attest that you are not making any changes and therefore you are not submitting a new test plan, the test plan that you have there? I mean, I guess that was the part that was unclear to me. What if the vendor's changing anything?
That's a fair question. I think there'd have to be conditions that would govern nothing changed. And so a couple of things. I think there's probably three three things I would say. The first is, if it's not new capability and it was part of a prior year's test plan and results submission, I think the minimum case is there needs to be an opportunity to differentiate by the testing approach something that allows for efficient regression testing. So, you know, maybe I do test it again, but I don't need to be as rigorous around constructing a formalized use case approach if I can provide a regression. It's existing software. It's been through this before. And maybe that's only allowed if I may need to make attestation statements that the capability really has not changed, or, you know, nothing material has occurred, and that a regression result should be accepted, and furthermore, it could be automated. Or there's allowance for that. You know, the vendor could choose to submit those things. The idea of saying I could attest to that without having to test it would be an alternative on that same type of idea, that if I did nothing to adopt new versions of the standard that's the subject matter here, I in fact didn't really do any material enhancement to it that would raise concerns about the capabilities of the certified product being abrogated by new development, things of that nature. I know that's probably, it's still something that would be subject to surveillance activities of other kinds. There's other accountable points that vendors are held to that could serve to be supportive points to keep the vendor accountable that they're not just trying to get by something. Is there any room for that? And then the third statement would be, and perhaps it's only something available to products that have been through testing before and the capabilities have been proven through the real-world testing approach, but to be able to look to the role of actual production use, and that goes towards the measurement side of this, if there's ways to demonstrate that it is a high-use production capability. What is real-world testing going to prove that real-world production use doesn't? So that's kind of the point of it. And maybe what we're really describing is a menu of things that it's flexibility the vendor could have that could be deemed acceptable by the ACB, and not just insistent on it's always got to be use case scenario-based testing each and every time, every year.
Yeah, I think that's worth having some clarification on or making those recommendations for consideration.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes back to the discussion we had earlier about the goal of the testing itself. If it's about the exchange of information, John, I think you're absolutely right. There's probably some other ways that could be done instead of going through the more intensive actual testing on the production system or production-like system. If, however, the goal is to also get at the use, usability, usefulness, then I think that's going to require provider participation. I think we need clarity on these.
Yeah. And given the fact that they give flexibility for standards advancement to be criteria specific, so even for the same specification, if it shows up in more than one standard, kind of suggests that there's a dimension to this that I can have a resting state for given criteria year over year where I really haven't done anything. Others progress and should be subjected to a fresh round of the most rigorous level of testing that the methodology calls for. And that not everything's at the same level in that kind of a situation.
Yep.
So thinking about this from the government's perspective and how broad this regulatory language is in terms of this testing, on one hand, we don't want the government to be overly prescriptive because then it sort of boxes people in. They do have the ability to, through the ONC ACB the certifying bodies to actually have them provide guidance. And I like the idea, you know, and it mentions on page 284 about having a pilot year. I mean, I absolutely think we should recommend that that does happen. You know, even if there's even 9 months
yes.
available, I think it would serve the entire community, including the government, well, if there was a pilot year for putting together a real world testing plan and trying it out and having the ONC certifying body to be able to assess the various types of plans that come in and what the results look like, and maybe then create some templates around what makes sense going forward that wouldn't require rulemaking. So if they get too prescriptive in the rule, the actual regulatory text, it takes away that ability, I think. And maybe our ONC team can clarify whether that's true or not. But
so I do, Denise, on page 284, they do talk about potentially treating 2020
yeah.
as a pilot year for real-world testing.
Yeah, and so they're asking for comments on this potential approach, and I think it would be worthwhile for us to make a recommendation on this.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so continuing through on the items that need to go in the plan, there's the schedule of key real-world testing milestones, a description of the expected outcomes, and then at least one measurement metric. And I think these items, to me, fall into that bucket of a template or some guidelines and suggestions as to what this might look like would be helpful.
And I think on the measurement, Sasha and I were talking a lot about probably need a good description of what the goal of measurement is. There's a difference between measurement to prove, you know, throughput or to prove success in transacting, things of that nature from looking at data quality or looking, you know, some things you're bringing up, Raj, around being able to really do something with the received transaction or the received data set. And they only say one, so not that every vendor would literally only do one, but if you're going to do one, you want to make sure it's providing real value.
It does say, they give an example on page 282. We encourage health IT developers to consider metrics of use in exchange from existing networks. You know, like that would be Commonwealth is an existing network. Communities and tools, including but not limited to SureScripts, CareQuality, Commonwealth, Health Alliance, and so forth. They have direct trust in here. It's interesting because care quality and direct trust are not networks. They're framework.
Yeah.
Funny how people use that interchangeably.
And as discussed, they highlight use or they highlight volumes or, you know, potential
mm-hmm.
metrics of
adoption.
Yeah,
so that's just the exact exchange of information. It doesn't necessarily have any measure of the usability of it that Raj is talking
about. Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just as a reminder, we should probably break for public comment in a few minutes. I know we are kind of right in the middle of this, but just a quick time check.
Yeah, so Lauren, is that at about 10 till that we should break?
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we just use the next 2 or 3 minutes to just summarize all of these, I think it's A through G, that relate to what needs to be in the plan. So we just talked about the measurement metric. The last point, G, a justification for the health IT developer's real-world testing approach. You know, any comments on that?
Yeah, I think that goes back to the earlier things we were talking about. If you're speaking of A, dealing with allowing for methodologies, use of real-world results or production results, things of that nature that we were talking about before. I don't have anything further on A.
Okay. Okay. So I think as we articulate the recommendation here, a lot of this, again, I think ties back to what's the goal of the testing itself. And then that is going to, you know, what are the measurement and metrics that need to be used, depending exactly on that goal, who the participants actually are, whether the vendor can do it alone or whether the providers are involved. So I think we can tie each one of these back to those points. So the next section, I believe, looking down at number two here, 20 page, is about the actual report itself, which much of this, I believe, mirrors what's in the plan and it's kind of just the report out phase here. And given that we needed public comment, I think maybe we should just pause and jump into the public comment first.
Before we do, Raj, I think, yes, this does mirror, and I think the only point that we did hear about yesterday was possibly the issue with the January 31st date. So the timeline, we may want to make some, and I think we're already making a recommendation or a comment on that.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so let's go over to comments.
Sure, so we're just pulling up now. Okay. Operator, can you please open the public line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, and I see we don't have a large group today, but do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are currently no comments.
Okay, and just want to confirm, I don't see Les has joined either. Okay, great. So maybe we can just use the last 10 minutes to wrap up. We do have to have a hard stop at 4 because we have another task force call right after this one.
Okay, so are there any additional comments, I guess, John, Denise, around the report itself, the reporting out? So Denise noted the time frame. Were there any other things there? Because perhaps we can stop at.
Yeah, I don't
and Neil,
think. No, go ahead.
No,
I was going to say nothing came to mind that we haven't already covered most of our approach and our comments. I think we're more on the principles behind the testing, the objectives, and its structure, not so much the reporting out of the result.
And
okay.
I didn't have anything to add on that, Raj. And I think the only piece that we really didn't get to talk about, and I know attestations is a very short part, but we did need to have a little bit of discussion on the advanced, the leveraging the standards version advancement process, and whether, I mean, I actually think that was well thought out. But I don't know if John has any specific concerns from a vendor perspective about the ability to leverage the standards version advancement process that ONC is proposing. So, I mean, probably the only thing that I found in there that really I had a question about is if one vendor advances to a version that ONC has approved in this advancement process, what about compatibility from an interoperability perspective with lower versions on other vendors' health IT? That was the only thing that I didn't really see addressed in this preamble.
I think there were a couple of things that we were kind of curious about with the practical nature of applying the process. So one was, would existing certified EHR technology be subjected to that real-world testing requirements, or would it apply only to new certified EHR technology? And I'm not sure I'm being real clear with that, but just to be clear if that testing requirement applied to newly certified products for real world testing purposes versus those that have been around for a while. I think the answer to that is that's up to the vendor's discretion about where they make the claim. Since that's criteria specific about where they choose to voluntarily assert that they support a new version.
I think they were pretty clear, John, that everybody had to have a test plan for these certification criteria related to interoperability, whether you had an existing product for real-world testing.
Yeah, I was more on the point of you have discretion about which criteria you elect to opt to assert a claim that you support a higher version of standard. And I assume that it seemed pretty clear. I don't think that was controversial, but that wouldn't compel you to test a standard that you, for anything more than you claim it. Trying to see if we really had any other questions about it. Most of our questions are often other considerations about how the claim is communicated. It doesn't really have to do with real world testing.
Raj, was there anything?
The one thing that did come to mind, there is a little bit of a quirk that the rule highlights that the vendor, if they elect to assert a claim for a version of standard for which there's no tooling yet, I think part of this that we're a little uncertain about is the role of how the conformance testing is to occur. Discretion seems to accrue back to the vendor for a new cert or to support a claim and perhaps to also utilize in real world testing, because I think that's where the statement was made that it is purely based on a vendor statement and it may not be something that's testable in any independent way or subject to tooling that would be available for a new certification that would ingest that same standard. So there seemed to be kind of a timing quirk in there. And I don't know if ONC has an actual point of experience with that. It can happen at any point in time because there's a time lag between normative validating and incorporation of a new standard version into tooling, but the vendor may be making a claim that it was a little bit fuzzy how that would be proven through real-world testing when there's no conformance capability other than what the vendor would themselves assert. So I couldn't go to a test harness.
Well,
I couldn't go to this tooling.
I think that's what the preamble sort of left it to, was the vendor to make that attestation to the...
But an attestation is not a... An attestation is not a proof of conformance through real-world testing. It just seemed a little... I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say other than that. It's a hard point to prove through real-world testing that is predicated on proving an attestation statement by more than an attestation statement, if I'm making any sense.
Well,
yeah,
I think that makes
a difference of attestation versus more evidence-based showing results.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think they were alleviating the vendor or the IT developer of doing real-world testing. I think it was referring more to the certifying body not having the tooling available yet to do the conformance testing with the vendor to certify to that standard, because the standard was just adopted and accepted in this advancement process by ONC. So there is a little time frame in there, but once that tooling is available, I am sure that, you know, if it doesn't show up in the real-world testing and through surveillance of the real-world testing, it's subject to conditions of maintenance.
It's a timing quirk. It might not really happen all that often, but it seems to be a loose end to me for real-world testing that to be honest, a lot of vendors are going to rely on conformance tooling or conformance testing capabilities to prove their attestation claim, or to me, I'd question why they would be making it. And it's an odd chicken and the egg, because the very tooling that isn't available is probably what in normal cases would be important to rely on to prove a point for a vendor attesting to supporting a new version. That's not independently subjected to a new round of certification testing, because that's kind of the point of the voluntary adoption in a way. It's you have to prove it in real-world testing, and yet you don't have mm-hmm. the tooling that you might normally rely on to prove it in any case, in any testing. So it okay. just,
well,
I'm not sure it's a value to comment? Have an attestation to a level of standard that's not able to be tested, in other words.
Yeah, I think those are good points. We are at the top of the hour, and I know everybody has stuff they have to run to now. So
yeah.
I think we made it far, which is great, and I think we have some good recommendations at this point. I believe the next meeting is tomorrow, where we plan to go into APIs, and I think it may make sense for us to make that transition. But Denise, we can talk after this, and then you'll be driving that next call, so we can go from there.
Okay.
And just so you know, Denise and Raj, I will be about 30 minutes. I won't be able to join until about after the first 30 minutes of the call tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, John, for being so. Being such a great participant on this one. We appreciate it, and we'll talk with you tomorrow.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Okay. Bye.
All right. And we'll redial into the other number.
Heads up. I'll be like 3 minutes late.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.